Assembly Meeting, Regular Meeting Number 2013-19, to order, and we'll have the flag salute. Mr. Jones, will you honor us?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Mr. Dipdo?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis? Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Present.
Mayor Sanford?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We'll move on to special order of business, and our special order of business today is recognition of our Special Olympics, and we have a number of them with us in the chamber. If all of you who are Special Olympians, come on up and face the crowd here, and we'll read a little letter saying thank you.
You want this now?
Stand right here, Jack, and face out. Alright. How are y'all doing? Everybody doing good up there?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to read the names first of the 19 Olympians who went up north earlier this year, and then I'm going to read a little recognition letter to them, and then say thank you to them for all of their hard work and their effort that they went through. CJ Ums. Is CJ here?
Yes.
All right. Nolan Harvey? All right. Jacob Lewis? Jacob? Laurel Puntalasco?
No.
Not here? No. Jessica Gilbert? Luis Hernandez?
He's not here.
Okay. Kyle Scott? Michelle Foster? Carl Benhart? Bender, excuse me. Carl?
Hi.
Hi. Tamara Birch. Jesse Quick.
He's not here.
Shiloh Dietrich.
Chloe.
Chloe. All right. Thank you, Chloe. Apasaloma Leah.
Not here.
Andrews Jones.
Here.
Andrew, how are you doing?
Good.
Chris Brenner.
He's working.
Captain Jones.
Yeah.
Christina Brown.
Yeah.
Jason Ernest.
Working.
Leroy George. All right, to recognize all these fine young Olympians, we have a special little letter, and it says, to each individual, reference Special Olympic Summer Games. Dear CJ, CJs, we're using first here. Athletes takes a dedication of time, determination, and to some extent, talent. However, regardless of the event, a true sportsman is one that takes the time to assist others, is determined to allow all to succeed, and teaches other to grow talent. In June, you and your fellow teammates traveled to Anchorage to participate in the Special Olympic Summer Games. The general team of 19 athletes brought home many gold, silver, and bronze medals. But more importantly, you were stellar ambassadors of general with your sportsmanship, teamwork, and athleticism. Your time, determination, and talent shows you are athletes, but most importantly, true sportsmen. Thank you for representing the capital city, and congratulations on all of your endeavors. Thank you very much, athletes.
Joining the meeting.
Shake all of our hands. Come on down this way.
Congratulations.
Hi, Jerry here. I'm online.
Hey, congratulations.
Hi, Jerry.
Congratulations. I see you. Oh, my gosh. Congratulations.
Mr. Jones.
Great job.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Hey, well done.
Oh, wow. You've got a lot of medals. Look at you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. For coming tonight.
Oh, you've got a lot of medals.
Thank you.
Well done. Mr. Harvey, well done, sir. Tell your dad I said hi.
Congratulations.
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 Hey, well done.
Look at how many medals he has. Congratulations.
I hear you, Jerry. Are you still there?
All right, we'll just...
Yeah, I'm still here.
We'll take a couple minutes here and wait until everybody leaves the chamber, sir. Bye-bye. Thank you, guys. Thanks. All right, we'll move back into order and... go to approval of minutes, and the first set of minutes is the regular assembly meeting for 2013-16. Are there any corrections to those minutes? Are there any objections to their being approved? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. The next set of minutes are June 28th, special assembly meeting 2013-17. Any corrections? Any objections to approval? Seeing none, so ordered. The next one is July 8th, special assembly meeting 2013-18. Are there any corrections to that set of minutes? Seeing none, is there any objections to their adoption? Hearing none, so ordered. We move on to manager's request for agenda changes.
None, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And we'll move into public participation on non-agenda items. Right now, I only have one person signed up for a non-agenda items, Mr. Paul Thomas, if you want to come forward. Is there anybody else in the public who wish to speak on something that is not on the assembly format? Thank you. Mr. Paul Thomas.
Thank you. Paul Thomas, I'm Vice President of the Downtown Business Association, and I own Alaska Cash Liquor here in the downtown. 156 South Franklin Street. I'm sure you're either already aware or know what's coming up, but Parks and Recreation are planning on moving the downtown parking to a pay, park, and display system, representing it to the public as improved parking system and needed to provide the users with the best possible service. This is a true injustice to the system that we were promised. Pay, park, and display is a move backwards from our current system of vehicle registration.
Sorry.
That system was originally designed in the 1950s for California. What we're supposed to be doing right now, where we should be with this system that we have, is the introduction of pay by phone, your smartphones, or pay by telephone. And pay by website, allowing citizens to skip going to the meters altogether. They would be able to come downtown, park, go on about their business. Instead, we will be chasing them out of the downtown by making them go back and forth between their car and the meter multiple times in the rain and the snow for even a short visit to one of our merchants. After polling the Downtown Business Association today, the board unanimously agreed that the DBA does not support this move to a park pay and display system. The DBA does not see this as an improved parking system or the best possible service, and it should not be sold to the public as such. DBA requests a timeline of events with a hard date of when the meter will be functioning as originally promised in the initial conception, and when the pay by phone and pay by website features will be brought online. We understand there are communication issues with the equipment and the cell provider, but we feel we should be moving forward with a much higher priority of getting the system to operate correctly as promised, rather than further complicating downtown parking at the expense of our neighbors and downtown businesses. We appreciate the communications that have come for Parks and Rec to date and hope it will continue, but we cannot support this change as DBA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Is there any questions for Mr. Thomas? We do have a staff report later on in the meeting about parking and where we're at with that. So staff will be reporting to us what's going on with it. Any questions for Mr. Thomas? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you.
All right, consent agenda. Public, is there any requests from the public for consent agenda changes other than ordinances for introduction? Seeing none. Assembly requests for consent agenda changes.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to pull resolution 2656.
Thank you, and that is?
It's the resolution regarding the mine agreements.
Unitization agreement?
Yes.
Thank you. Is there any objections to that? So ordered. Is there any other changes to the consent agenda? Seeing or hearing none, wishes of the assembly? Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of the consent agenda with the removal of resolution 2656 and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? So ordered. Madam Clerk, can you read the resolution? Mm-hmm.
Resolution 2656, a resolution approving the amended agreements between the City and Borough and AJT Mining Properties Incorporated, unitizing certain mining properties.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. City Manager, can we have an update?
In 1975, the City and Borough of Juneau and the predecessor to AJT Mining Properties, ALMP, recognizing that their split ownership of the AJ and Treadwell mining properties was an impediment to the economic operation of future mining activities, entered into a unitization agreement for those properties. The parties modified the agreement in 1979, separating the Douglas and Juneau properties into separate unitization agreements. The agreements established 3-year terms with automatic renewals every year. These two agreements remain in effect today. This resolution would authorize the manager to renew the agreements, establishing new 3-year terms for the unitization agreements. The reasons for this action is to demonstrate to potential lessees the commitment of CBJ and AJT to make their mineral properties available for responsible development. These agreements help advance one of the Assembly's top 10 goals adopted on November 17, 2012, which is to explore the feasibility of leasing the AJ mine. I recommend this resolution be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Public comment? Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on this resolution? Seeing none, wishes of the assembly. Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move assembly approval of resolution 2656.
Object.
Ms. Crane, you were next.
While this may be perfectly acceptable, and there's been no opportunity for the public to look at this or comment, I feel that I cannot make an educated vote on this. There's so much information here. We list in the resolution, it lists particular areas and sections of Juneau and Douglas. I have no maps to refer back to those. You know, I just cannot provide an informed vote on this. There's been no discussion at the assembly level that I'm aware of, and I would like to see this referred back to the Committee of the Whole so that we can take a more comprehensive look at this.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. And staff is the one that started work on this, and because it was on our assembly goals, and they moved forward with it, and it's basically the same thing as what we've had for since 1975 with very little change. There was a couple of changes, because every time you go through the maps with individual people, you see, because there's a whole bunch of mining claims that are incorporated into these two unitization agreements, you find little odds and ends of parcels and pieces that aren't and won't be ever identified until you actually start to get on the ground and start using those parcels. So,
well, you know, staff may be more familiar with those maps than I am. And to be able to vote intelligently on this, I do not feel that I have the information to be able to do that. In addition to which, our goal for the assembly was to explore the possibility. And the language here seems to suggest that the decision's already been made.
Well, okay. So, thank you. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I echo Ms. Crane's comments, and while we could certainly spend some time tonight, I've got at least half a dozen questions written down, and would also like to see maps. I'm not familiar with some of the claims, and all right, any of the claims listed out by name here. And I'm happy to have a conversation with the city attorney about the charter implications of whereas number five, which I think has a serious charter problem. The most important thing to my way of thinking is that the public really hasn't had an opportunity to see this, to chew on it, and to tell us whether they think this is a good idea or not. So I think that we need to spend some time. I think Committee of the Whole is an ideal place to review this, to work on it. And so I certainly associate myself with her recommendation that we refer the resolution to COW.
Thank you, Mr. Kahn. Mr. Wanamaker, and then Mr. Jones, did you have your hand? Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't see the need to refer this to the Committee of the Whole. We have an existing agreement. It has a couple of amendments to parts of it. We do this routinely with docks and harbors contracts, airport contracts, and we don't have public hearings. This is an agreement that's been in place for a long time. It's a simple amendment, and again, we don't hold public hearings for contract amendments, so I don't see the need to refer this and would not support such a move. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Mr. Jones.
I guess I would disagree with Mr. Wanamaker that the Section 20, the one that caught my eye, was basically said that this agreement had been recorded in the recording district, but if we approve this, that would be rescinded. I have no idea what that is, what it was. So I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to. I've only been on the assembly about 7-8 months. I've never seen any of the original agreements. I have no idea what the changes are. Also in that Section 20, it talked about unspent funds contributed by the parties would be divided equally. There's no mention in any staff report whether any money had ever been appropriated or is due back and unspent. I just have lots of questions, and there's just no way I could support passing it this time, and I would support going back to the Committee of the Whole.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We've heard from the manager, who's recommended that we do go forward. The way I've read these agreements is that the manager has full authority from this point, should be granted that authority. The agreement calls for responsible development. And finally, it advances our already approved assembly goals, and I'm supportive of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Becker, do you have anything?
No, thank you. I agree with Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Mr. Dibdahl, do you have anything for us?
Mr. Smith.
I'll call for the question.
Mr. Nankervis, let me ask Mr. Nankervis first, Mr. Dibdahl. Mr. Nankervis, do you have anything for us?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree. I'm not convinced that it needs to go back to the whole. I'm not sure that I can recall a resolution that went to the Committee of the Whole. This has been in place for 30 years. There's numerous places in there that it talks about the manager has permission to do some things but it also says in numerous places that the assembly has to approve things or disapprove of what might happen. So it still retains the power with us to make decisions on what we want to do. That looks like a housekeeping measure to me. I think we should move forward with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. And so we're at the point from Mr. Dibdall's call for the question. Is there still objection?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, on the resolution or the motion to refer?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Wanamaker.
There was no motion to refer. There was a recommendation, but no motion.
He made the motion. I made the recommendation. So the motion is to pass it.
Move it tonight.
Well, in that case, Mr. Mayor, I'd like the opportunity to go through my list of questions if we're not have a don't have a motion to refer before.
Flip it on us, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me begin with Mr. Jones' comment about remaining funds in an existing account to be distributed equally between the parties. The first question would be how much, and were they contributed equally by the two parties initially?
Mr. Watt, come on up here and sit with us. And that was in Section 20 of the unitization agreement?
Mr. Mayor, I do not know the answer to that question.
Thank you. And Madam Manager, you don't either?
I don't. Okay.
Thank you.
So it's entirely conceivable that all the money came from Juneau taxpayers, but it could be split evenly between?
No, it's not. That isn't what this says. The lease agreement that will happen eventually if we give the okay to go forward. This is only for the unitization agreement between AJT and the City and Borough of Juneau. It is not for a lease agreement to do any type of work up there or anything like that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question was specific to unspent funds contributed by the parties under the agreement dated July 30, 1980, which is rescinded and of no further force or effect when we pass this. So those unspent funds could have been contributed entirely or disproportionately by taxpayers and would be getting split 50-50 between taxpayers and AJT.
Do you know if there's any funds left, Mr. Watt?
I've never
heard of any myself.
Earlier in the agreement, it talks about parties contributing funds in proportion to the properties, and I can only assume that they followed the agreement. I believe there is a very small joint account on the order of $15,000 or $20,000.
Mr. Kidd.
Thank you. Speaking of the proportion between the properties, the agreement's plural, as near as I can tell, I'll come to that in a minute, lay out a formula for the proportion of the share of the parties. And it's in areas contained in codicils or attachments to this, divided by other areas. Can you just let me know for the Juneau Gold and the Douglas Gold, what are the proportions, please, between the two parties?
The proportions for Juneau Gold, 2/3 CBJ, 1/3 AJT, Douglas Gold, it's the reverse. 2/3 AJT, 1/3 CBJ.
Thank you. And then netted together?
What? Say your question, please. I didn't get it.
The two netted together? What then are those? Are those proportions?
The agreements talk about the proportion of proceeds. So there are no proceeds, and so there's nothing to net together. It's a future question.
Which is in the lease, eventually.
I'm sorry, I'm speaking to Section 5. The proportion of the share of each party to the unit is determined by a formula which is in areas, not proceeds.
I think my earlier answer is the The agreement of Section 5 is that if there were royalties in Juno Gold, the proportion to the city would be 2/3 of the royalty and 1/3 to AJT, and in Douglas Gold, the reverse.
And then if the two were operating together, then the net proportions would
It would depend on the amount of resource that was removed from the respective ore bodies.
Okay. I don't want to dominate the conversation. I have quite a few questions. But
keep asking, Jesse.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The substantive difference in the come to this. If we're unitizing the two, we seem to have two units. Am I understanding correctly that we're not unitizing all of the properties in question, but we're ending up with two units, a Juno Gold unit and a Douglas, Gold unit at the end of the day?
That's correct.
And are there provisions that would require, encourage, otherwise be involved in one operator for the two units, or is it conceivable there'd be two operators for the separate units, one operating and one dormant? How are we handling these? When I think of unitizing.
The purpose of the unitizing is to create a clear property ownership structure for a prospective company. If a company was interested in leasing one or the other or both properties controlled by the two units, then there would be obviously a long term of conditions in a lease document. And so it depends. And that lease would come to the assembly for approval by ordinance.
Okay. Thank you. So then at the end of Section 5, we do have a difference between the two unit agreements. And I wonder if you could speak to what the practical impact or effect of that is.
The practical impact is that CBJ has a greater stake in the resource value of Juno Gold, and AJT has a greater stake in the resource value of Douglas Gold. And that was the, I think for a variety of reasons, the agreement that they reached in the 70s.
I guess what I'm unclear about is the impact of the phrase, and as provided in exploration, development, or production, that is appended to the Douglas Gold portion, but is not present in the Juno Gold portion. It seems to have to do with proportions when somebody loses their shirt. And I'm looking for what this means to the downside risk. That may be a question for the attorney. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I thought you were addressing that to Mr. Watt. Could you repeat the question, please?
I think we're up to two here where we don't have an answer. In Section 5 of the two unit agreements, there seems to be some sort of substantive difference I don't understand at the very end. And as near as I can figure it out, there's a difference in how the proportions of the shares of the parties get adjusted when somebody loses their shirt. And in the Douglas agreement, it is as agreed prior to the entry of an agreement, and as provided in exploration, development, or production, but that last phrase is not present for the Juno Gold agreement. So I need to know what the practical impact of that is.
That's not a legal question as to how the calculation occurred or what the calculation, how the parties arrived at the calculation. And I think it's important to note that the calculation hasn't changed since 1979 and 80, when the two agreements were put into place. And in fact, those agreements are still alive, if you will, and valid and binding until one of the parties gives notice of cancellation. They're still in effect.
Which is helpful to know that there's no fire here and we don't have to act on this tonight, but I don't understand why we would adjust those differently for the two units in the event of a taking in an eminent domain proceeding or upon the mutual agreement.
I don't know what the difference in the last clause is, but it does not look substantive to me.
I mean, because we always did isn't really a good government answer, so I'm particularly keen to get an answer to that one. There's a similar difference in Section 18. I don't know if that casts any light. In the Juno Gold, property of the first party may become subject to security interests in favor of the others, and then looks like in Douglas there are other liens. Can someone explain to me the difference in Section 18, please, and what it means to the city?
I believe that language dates back to the original purchase of the properties from AJ Industries, and that AJT had a financing vehicle, and they essentially had a lien from their financing. But I don't believe that lien still exists.
Well, why then is it still in our agreements with them?
The agreements that you have before you are as they've been for 33 years, with two changes. And the two changes are an updating on the records ownership to clarify what happened in the 90s when the records were given to the state library. And the other change is to put a three-year initial term to grant time. Other than that, these agreements read as the ones that exist today. Whether or not the assembly passes these tonight, this is the language that we live under.
Ms. Crane?
Mr. Keel, ask a question about the special fund and distribution, but it does say in here
that... Ms. Crane?
I'm so sorry.
What page? So we're on the same...
Page 4.
Thank you.
It says that all accurate records of all receipts and expenditures shall be kept by the agents. Special funds shall be established for the purpose of paying the expenses incurred in the performance of this agreement. And what kind of expenses are we incurring with the performance of this agreement? I mean, there certainly has not been anything included in a budget document that I've been aware of the last 5 years. So are there expenses? And if there are going to be, what kind are we talking about?
I think the short answer is no, there are not expenses unless the parties choose to make expenditures. And presumably those expenditures would be some sort of marketing of the property. That's the purpose of the agreement is to join the property together to find an interested entity.
And would that decision to market that property have to come back to the assembly?
Yes.
As I'm concerned, it does, yeah.
And any appropriation of funds would have to come back to the assembly.
And so the only appropriation funds that I can think of is the appropriation of funds that we did at the CIP level in accordance to the water issue, and we included Mr. Watts. Any time that he's working on AJ stuff, his salary is pulled from that CIP, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Watts.
That's right.
So that's the only appropriated funds that are out there at this time. Mr. Jones, you seem to have some questions or not?
Most of mine have been answered, but I had a couple that have come to mind. During the last time of exploration, was it 20 years ago now, when there was a lot of exploration and you went through all that in your water study, was there any appropriations by the assembly during that process at all that you know of?
In truth, I don't.
And anything that would have fallen under this agreement? I assume everything that was done there would have fallen under this agreement.
Well,
or the lease.
This agreement governed the negotiation of CBJ and AJT together to create a lease that was signed by a series of mining companies. And under that lease, there were some lease payments, and then there were some funds that were paid under that lease.
So we received funds from that previous lease, and that was distributed based on this formula?
I assume so.
Or did it all come to the city?
No, I assume that we lived by the legal agreement, but this is 20 years ago, so I don't have...
Okay.
I can't tell you exactly what happened.
Okay. And then just one other question on page 5, number 17. What is the property or properties being excluded there?
And when AJ Industries sold all of its interests, they had some properties not in the Juneau Gold Belt that AJT, or it was actually AALP back then, purchased from AJ Industries, and those properties were not part of this agreement. So it's nothing to do with.
So is Juneau Gold Belt AALP? Or this says properties in the Juneau Gold Belt.
And that would apply to the mineral region. And that's a term by the USGS for the mineral region that we live in.
Okay.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. As a geologist, I can explain that a gold belt is a belt of mineralized rock that is rich in gold compared to normal values. And that's what this area is known as, is the Juneau Gold Belt area. So it's a layer of mineralized rock. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, maybe to clarify a little more. So AJ Industries, when they dissolved their holdings, they had mineral rights, they had surface rights, they had hydroelectric facilities, and the city and AALP bought the remainder of those rights. AALP ended up with the power generation facilities. The city got the majority of the Gold Creek watershed, and on like that. And so what this says is that some of these other little properties that are not part of the region here are not part of this agreement. So they're properties that don't have to do with the historic operating mine in the area.
Mr. Keel, you had another question?
Well, and then, so am I to understand that this is a discrete area, or are these properties scattered throughout the borough?
They are all connected. So on the Juneau side, the Juneau Gold side, it's the ore body that was mined by AJ Industries. And on the Douglas side, it's the ore bodies that were mined by the Treadwell Consortium.
And they therefore go to a certain depth or elevation?
They go as deep as is practical.
As the gold and the minerals flow,
I'm sorry,
they go.
The excluded properties, USGS Bulletin 287.
I believe the exclusion properties are not in our immediate geographic area. There are other assets. There are other remnant assets of AJ Industries that the power company ended up in possession of as a result of AJ Industries liquidating its holdings. And they're unrelated to the AJ mine or the Treadwell mine.
But we can't speak to their distribution geographically.
No.
It's already been distributed.
Yes.
And settled in the beginning of all the agreements.
Yes.
For instance, Annex Creek is a good example. You know, Annex Creek is within the boundaries of AJT and their
power company. I don't know what the other ones were, but there's a lot of things like that in the peripheral of the whole AJ Gold Belt that's immediate to Gaston Avenue or Gaston Channel. Those properties right here, close by.
Okay, well, it's good to know a property that's covered by the exclusion. But a map is sorely lacking. I guess this would be an opportune time to go back to the question about expenditures under these agreements, and especially under the resolution, because the resolution in Section 5 does something I haven't seen us do in my years here. It seems to create by resolution a subset of the assembly with legislative powers. It creates a committee of the assembly, it says, that we would authorize to any of the authority and duties of the assembly under the agreements, and some of those, of course, were just spoken to in terms of spending money. And I'm not sure, A, that the charter allows us to create a subset of the assembly empowered to spend money, period. But B, I'm pretty sure that Article 3, Section 316 doesn't let us do it by resolution. And so I think we have a real charter problem with this section of the resolution. And here I turn to the attorney to talk about how you can create a quasi-legislative group by resolution.
So the unitization agreement, all what it does, as Mr. Watt said, is create an entity or a body that mining companies can negotiate with, because when there are multiple landowners for a particular mining parcel, it's very difficult for a mining company to come in and negotiate with two very separate entities. That's the purpose of the unitization agreement. The unitization agreement itself does not allow for the doing of anything that would have to come before this body, such as entering into a lease agreement. The unitization agreement itself and the two agents that are appointed by each of the parties to act for them under the unitization agreement cannot enter into a lease by themselves. They cannot do anything by themselves that one is in either scoped out in the unitization agreement or otherwise authorized by law. So, for example, the language in the agreement which talks about appropriations, the way that would have to work would be this body would have to appropriate an amount of money to do things under this agreement and then allow this committee, the standing committee that you create, to act as you would appoint the city manager to take a pot of money that you've appropriated to do things with, that you've already agreed on and approved. Does that make sense?
Except that's not what it says. The parties here too agree from time to time to appropriate amounts of money in proportion to et cetera, et cetera. And so if the assembly purports to create a committee of the assembly to which it may delegate that authority, we have a charter problem.
As I said, this language is already in place. This is the language that's been in place for a really long time. And I think that the way that this language has been read and interpreted is to be in conformity with our charter and our code.
I'm sorry, Ms. Mead, the language that the assembly may appoint a committee of the assembly to which it delegates the authority here, that's in our code or in our...
That is in a resolution that has already been adopted. The resolution that adopted the two prior agreements, that's where that language came from.
And do we have a copy of that in our packet tonight?
No.
No. Do we have a copy of the prior agreements repealed by these agreements?
Yes.
In our packets
no.
tonight? Have we provided any of this to the public at all?
only that it's public records. No.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we table this resolution to the next regular assembly meeting.
Objection.
Thank you. Been moved to table this to the next assembly meeting, and we have an objection, so we need to vote on the tabling motion, whether we want to or not. Ms. Sika.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis? Mr. Nankervis, do you have your phone on mute? Mr. Smith?
No.
Mr. Wanamaker?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Dibdahl?
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Mayor Sanford?
No.
Motion to table fails.
So now we're back to the original motion.
Call for the question on the original motion.
Madam Clerk, could you please call the roll on the original motion?
Mm-hmm.
And this is to pass?
Mm-hmm. Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
No. Wait, yes. Excuse me. Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, we will move on to public hearing on the ordinance that we have open for public hearing tonight, which is ordinance number 2013-19B. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the land use code regarding flood hazard areas and definitions.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
To remain in the National Flood Insurance Program, the CBJ is required to adopt a new flooded insurance rate map set, an associated flood insurance study, and additional flood regulations by August 19, 2013. The flood maps locate flood-prone areas along coastal, river, and inland lake areas. The new flood maps are more detailed and based on current data and mapping methods, yielding more accurate flood zone determinations. Flood insurance is required for buildings in flood-prone areas that are financed through a loan or mortgage. The largest impact resulting from the new flood regulations is the requirement for new or substantially improved buildings in velocity zones to be elevated on pilings instead of new fill material, thereby allowing waves to flow under the building. The CBJ has hosted meetings to educate the public on the map adoption process. After review of the maps by CDD and the Planning Commission and the public, CDD has found weaknesses in the maps that may have incorrectly included buildings within map flood-prone areas. The Planning Commission and CDD have compiled a list of improvements to the maps. CBJ will work with FEMA to improve the maps and remove improperly included buildings from some mapped flood-prone areas after adoption is required by FEMA. And CBJ will continue to work with residents on map amendments. Version B includes housekeeping measures requested by FEMA, including establishing the final approval process by FEMA, and clarifies the definition of substantial improvement. The Planning Commission recommended approval of the floodplain maps, flood insurance study, and additional flood regulations on June 25, 2013. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there any persons in the public who wish to speak to this ordinance? Come on up. Is there anybody else out there who wishes to speak to this ordinance? Raise your hands high so I can see. Just one more? Two?
I provided a letter for somebody to read.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, Assembly Members, my name is Lawrence Blood, and I own property at 225 and 227 Irwin. And just in case you're wondering where Irwin is, it's the very first two houses on the concrete portion of Gold Creek, right below Cope Park. And first, before I get started, I just want to sincerely apologize to you and the Planning Commission and city staff for just now raising my objections. I should have been paying closer attention. But 2 years ago, my wife and I, we raised problems with the flood zone maps with Gold Creek. And we were assured that city would work with FEMA to work out those problems with Gold Creek because it was obvious that there were some serious problems there. So we kind of just assigned ourselves to let the chips fall where they may and see what happens. And then today I looked at the map and I was shocked to find that all the problems with Gold Creek was taken care of except for the two properties that I own and the Girl Scout building. And when I came and I talked to you 2 years ago, I demonstrated how water flows uphill at my house, and it still does. So seeing how I'm the only one that's really affected, that's still in the flood zone there in Gold Creek, I'm probably not on the list of things to still be addressed. So I would like to make sure I get on the record and ask that Gold Creek, there's still problems there and water's still flowing uphill at my house. So,
Mr. Blood, thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Blood? And I just would like to reiterate what the city manager said, that there's a list of properties who are in some new properties, in fact, most of them, 220 some properties in the new flood zone areas. And those we are dedicated to working with the property owners to try to figure out a way to make sure we delineate their properties properly for the flood insurance. So that's our goal. That's what we're working for. We're stuck in a hard place here. We have to adopt the floodplain maps.
Understand. And I'll make my way down to the community development department and talk to them down there. But I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Blood. Any other questions? Mr. Hart, do you have anything for us?
No, I was just
ma'am, you sent us a letter about Lena.
Yes.
Okay, could you come up and maybe answer some questions? I didn't exactly understand it because it was really brief. So if you'd come up and give us.
I also included four sheets that have maps and actually shows the flood map.
Time to make copies, so they're here right now.
Okay, go ahead and just explain then.
We feel that the topo map, that I don't know what they based this, the flood map, working with FEMA. And the map you're going to see there actually is about 15 years old.
Could I get your name and address first of all, ma'am?
Christina Munson, 638 Gold Street.
Thank you, ma'am. Go ahead.
Well, not having it in front of me, I don't. But the map shows a huge bubble of flood area behind our property. Mm-hmm. And the property that we live on has a road that goes through, I think it's about 9 properties, and it's at the same level. So my concern is I'm not quite understanding how the water can just come behind our house and not flow extended to the other properties.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Hart, I think if you could come up and sit with us and maybe this is a particular situation on Lena Loop Road that in the past had some low areas behind. But I don't know if it's still current.
It's not current because the city came in and did a culvert and placed it out to the beach, so all the water drains out to the beach now.
Okay. Mr. Hart?
Well, in instances like that where the city's changing drainage, that's really important information. Mm-hmm. And so that information then would be forwarded to us. We would as you stated before, Mr. Mayor, we would work with the property owners to make sure that whether or not true conditions on the ground are reflective in the map. Okay. So that's that's a good start to know that the drainage has been altered.
Okay. And this was back in, I believe, 2005 or 2004 that this was done.
Right. So this was one of the incidents. In fact, you have your first two customers, Mr. Hart, and to be able to work with these two people and try to figure out their particular situation for the flood map situation that we're in and try to get their properties settled up properly.
Very good.
Any questions?
I just want to say that I hope Ms. Monson understands that we can't do new mapping until we accept these maps. FEMA will not allow us to make any changes unless we accept these maps. Then we can go in and work on changes, not before. So as the mayor said, we've just kind of got our back up against the wall here. But Mr. Hart and the assembly, we are dedicated to trying to get the maps revised and get them corrected.
Mr. Mayor?
Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
And perhaps just quickly, perhaps Mr. Hart can expand on how we would engage a hydrologist to take a look at these sites.
Well, again, one of the things you're trying to do is to understand what has happened in the past there. What are the elevations on the ground and which way the water's flowing in that specific area? And if it's been altered, sometimes the flood could go to someone else's property by altering it unintentionally. So that's part of what the hydrologist might look at in a situation like this.
All right. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, ma'am, very much. Go ahead and move on back to the end of the. Okay, assembly action. Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move assembly approval of ordinance 2013-19B and ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing none online and in the chambers, so ordered. Madam Manager, are there any unfinished business?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Manager. New business. We have docks and harbors regulations. Orders of the day. Please move, Ms. Crane.
Move orders of the day for amendment of Title 5, Chapter 20 and Title 5, Chapter 40.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you, Ms. Crane. Airport regulations, rates and fee, regulation Title 7 and 9, same thing, orders of the day. Ms. Crane?
Move orders of the day for rates and fee, regulation Title 7, Chapter 10, airport regulations.
Thank you, Madam Crane. Is there any objections to that? Hearing none or seeing none, so ordered. You guys are moving too fast through the agenda here.
It's okay, Mr. Mayor.
Can't keep up with you. Okay. Staff reports. We have the parking update issue. Madam Manager.
You heard a little bit about it earlier this evening. After about 2.5 years, the CBJ is at a point where we cannot continue to rely on the current parking management system. Although APARC and AT&T have made improvements to the system in order to improve pay stations and handheld communications, and although the CBJ has purchased new handhelds with the express purpose of improving communication reliability, we continue to experience unacceptable communication delays and failures. Even though these communication breakdowns are fewer and farther between than they were the summer of 2011, they are still commonplace enough that our enforcement officers do not feel comfortable attesting to the accuracy of citations that they write. The system has three options. There's pay by space, which would require additional resources and may have some of the same communication issues. There's the pay by license plate, which is the system that we have now and has proven to be unreliable due to the communication problems, and that leaves us with pay and display as our only option. Pay and display will require people to register their cars and put the receipt on the dash of their car. They have to register it now, but the difference is that they have to put it back on their dash. There are currently 13 meters in the downtown area, and six of those meters are close to loading zones. If someone doesn't want to walk back to their car, they can stop at the loading zone, get the receipt, and then proceed to a parking space. At this time, APARC does not have accessible parking meters to be used in a drive-through parking system. It's one of the things we've been looking at. And if you've used the parking meters, you know that where you plug the numbers in and where you get receipt is about 3 feet difference. So trying to get that into a system that could actually be a drive-by would be challenging. Parks and Rec has put together ADA workarounds for people that need to be able to park downtown on a regular basis. They can get permits through Parks and Recreation, and so those cars can park on street and not worry about getting ticketed. The two-hour free parking will still continue with pay and display. With this change, we'll be able to begin enforcement again as soon as we can get the system changes on the back end. Our plan is to advertise those changes, re-educate people, and then have probably a week to 10 days of warning, and then begin to start the ticketing. This is disappointing for all of us. I believe we could have had a very good system if we could have consistent communication. We have not been able to get that. The contract that APARC has right now requires a 2G system, and that they are required to change that when 2G goes away, which is another 2 years. We are continuing to look to see how we can invest to get a 4G system in there so that we can address what we believe the communication issues are. We'll continue to work with APARC and AT&T on the issues and hope that we'll be able to return to the pay-by-license plate option and then be able to do the phone option as well as the web option. But at this time, and since November, we have not been able to have the system reliable enough for as many days in a row needed for the CSOs to actually sign their name to a ticket and say that they believe the information they received is accurate. With pay and display, they no longer will have to rely on their handheld. They will be able to see on the dash if somebody's parked beyond the time they're supposed to. Questions?
Ms. Crane.
Does this mean that people will be able to once again go back to moving their car around town and park here and then come out in 2 hours and move it again and then keep moving it around? Because once that stopped, that's what started to open up parking downtown so that people actually had an opportunity. And if we go back, that's a massive move back to closing parking up again.
The CSOs are committed to be monitoring cars closer than what they have been, not to the system what they used to have where they'd actually mark tires or put license plate numbers in, but they will be able to go in to the handhelds and put the license plate number in, and their handheld will keep that memory for the day of anybody that put that in, so they'll be able to look and see if somebody did register for 2 hours someplace else and they move that car and they think, oh, I saw that car before, they can put it in again and find out. And if they did, then they can write a ticket because they have the data there that shows that they moved it and tried to get 2 hours again.
Mr. Jesse Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've missed an important step. We've contracted with a company. The product doesn't work right. Why are we talking about changing how we do parking? Why aren't we talking about enforcing or ending the contract? There's more than one contractor out there.
Actually, they're very limited on how many contractors we have. I don't know if Ms. Mead would like to respond to that.
There's actually only one authorized representative who can service the units that we have installed in North America.
So different units.
Mr. Keel, go ahead.
Do we pay this contractor something for the system that doesn't work?
Yes.
So.
And we have been trying to build up enough of a case to go back to them, but because things have been intermittent, it's been hard to get something consistently that allow us to go back and say you're in breach of your contract. Is that?
That would be accurate to say.
Mr. Jones? Mr. Smith, excuse me. Then back to Jesse if you have another.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In the best case, what's the timing look like to implement this change?
It depends on how quickly APART can do the back end. So it means a change on the receipt. So the receipt now would have will say display on your dash. There's other wording. We've moved the time stamp to the very top of it so it's easier for the CSOs to look and find. So our hope is that APART can do the changes needed, and then we can test them to make sure they work on all of the different units and have that done in the next, I'm hoping, 2 weeks, but APARC has not confirmed when they can make those changes.
Mr. Smith, follow up.
Thank you. I recall when this system was rolled out to the public. What the second round, what do you envision in the way of briefing the public that's different?
We will, we've got a plan in place to have ads in the newspaper, radio ads, changing in the website, cbjjuno.org, working with businesses that have put out information on how to register for the system, to work with them to get that information back out to their patrons. So we will be spending more money and more time this time than we did when we first rolled it out, to let people know that this has changed. There's still a number of people that are putting the receipts on the dash now. It just, they've just continued to do that. And the CSO said that today when they were talking, that people are doing that anyway, so we just need to train everybody to do that.
Ms. Gray?
What about the parking garages, where it's not just a matter of walking down to the end of the block, getting your ticket and taking it back? In some instances, you have to go up 3 or 4 floors, and we've got the parking garage at the library where there are no elevators working. And so, you know, there's a big change in the parking garage where it's going to reduce people's desire to even further to park in the parking garage if they come down to the first floor and have to go back up to the fourth floor and put it in.
And one of the things that we can do in the garages is we can have a dedicated loading zone as close to the pay station as possible so people can pull in, go get their ticket, and then go up to upper floors to park. And so I will work with Parks and Rec to get something that for the garages. Most of the garage use is weekly or monthly use.
Go ahead, Ms. Gray.
And just a suggestion. I just returned this weekend from a visit to another community where if you had a current handicapped sign in the window, you could park free. So you could pull it. So it might be something that, at least for some period of time until things are easier, that we might want to consider.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
So if I understand right, the equipment we bought, there's only one authorized maintainer or persons that can update that. There are other pieces of equipment out there, right? There are other vendors that offer different equipment. I know, you know, I pay that way in Seattle. Every time I'm in that town, I pay in other towns that way. Have we looked at just replacing all of the units and therefore we have more competition and we have maybe a better responder?
We haven't at this point because of the expense that we have into the current system. We're trying to get it to work, but we will be looking at all options to figure out what that cost would be if we were going to start from scratch again.
Mr. Keel?
At the risk of sounding glib, I am deeply sympathetic to Mr. Thomas's comments about the effect on downtown businesses of this parking change, about the added inconvenience people complain bitterly about the system we have now, and I think often unjustly so, but to change it again just a couple of years in, and to, as someone said, I can't remember who said it, retrain the public rather than, as I think Mr. Jones may have been suggesting, retrain the vendor to provide a working product in keeping with the contract, strikes me as the wrong way to go. It seems to me that the training that needs to happen is that one servicer for the area is the vendor's problem if they want to keep cashing checks.
I have a question, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to just reinforce what Mr. Keel has said. I thought that was a great question that just floors me that we would pay for a product at all that only works intermittently. I would assume that when we signed a contract, we didn't sign a contract saying we wanted a system that only worked intermittently. I have a comment on the loading zones. I really don't support parking in a loading zone for people to run and get the paper for their dash. That kind of, in my mind, defeats the purpose of having a loading zone. That's for people to load stuff into the stores and things downtown. But my one question for staff would be, then, how much have we spent on this system so far that doesn't work?
Approximately $400,000.
Thank you.
Mr. Dibdahl, anything?
I was aghast at the number.
He's aghast at the numbers. Yes, it's a big amount. That's why we're trying to save the situation here, I think. Any other questions, comments for staff? And is there any way to put more pressure on the vendor than what we already have?
My understanding is this vendor works with a number of other communities, and my understanding in speaking with staff in CDD is that there is a loose group effort to do that. There have been talks about lawsuits. We can certainly explore that option. I'm happy to do that.
Yes, I would recommend that we stay right on top of that one. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like this sewer pipe or water pipe we put in the ground that was brand new, and mm-hmm. we've got three or four splits of it right now, and we have other pieces of that water pipe in the ground, and now we have a national lawsuit against, along with 800 other communities, trying to recoup our losses. But I would suggest that you stay right on top of that. Mr. Jones.
I guess two things I guess I would like to know some information on is, I assume, like in all contracts, there's some cancellation clause.
There is yes.
And at some point, maybe some information on that one and what's our role or rights under that. And secondly, I don't know that it would cost us a whole lot to go out and, you know, at least solicit some interest from some other vendors, find out what it would cost. And then if under the cancellation we could cancel in 30 or 40 or 60 days, we could put out quick interest and make some decisions and replace them fairly quickly. Seemed to me that that would give us some other options that might make the transition, if it was 4-month, 5-month transition, easier on the public and us. If we haven't been collecting revenues, maybe we, in 3 months, we could change vendors. We could forego that. I don't know. But it would seem to me that it would give me a lot more information if I knew that we had looked at other vendors and what it might cost to just eat the $400,000, cut our losses, and get something that works.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an alternative that we have and that we can look at. And so I would recommend that you get back to us next month and try to give us some options of what way you would recommend us to go, and then we'll probably give you the options of which way we think you should go, Madam Manager.
And just to clarify, right now, we're paying around $30,000 a year for maintenance, regular upkeep of the system, so patches and those kinds of things. We also are looking at the option of, as I said, moving from a 2G to a 4G network before they're required to by the contract. so that we can try and deal with the communication issues. So we'll bring those options back and as much as we can price tags that go with that. Right now, APARC has the contract and they're responsible for working with AT&T. We don't have a separate contract, so that's another option that we're looking at, is to narrow as much as we possibly can what APARC does, so that gives us more flexibility to do what we need to do outside of that.
All right, any other questions, comments? Thank you, Madam Manager.
Thank you.
And Madam Law Department, thank you. It's an easy division to run, isn't it? Community Development Department, Mr. Hart, can you give us a brief update on where we're at with permitting and everything? It's very interesting.
So in looking at our permit numbers, I have some good news to report. You might want to write these down or I can send them to you, but we've received 20 permits for single-family homes, just standalone single-family homes, so that's 20. We've received four more permits for single-family homes, and they would have some additional dwelling units associated with them, so that's another 8 dwelling units. So we're at 28. We have received a single family home that, so there's one home and then a couple of units. One is detached and one is in the home itself, so there's three more. We've got 3 duplexes so far this year. We have one manufactured home on an independent site. We have 3 fourplexes. All right, I take that back. I'm sorry. We have 2. Oh, yeah, okay. As triplexes and fourplexes together. So 2 permits for 7 units on that one. We've had... for 5 or more units, we have 2 major permits for that, for 25 multifamily units. We've got a manufactured home park that's pulled off 12 old units and put 12 brand new units in, so there's 12 more brand new manufactured units. In addition, we have through additions all alterations and conversions, we've added 6 more units to existing single-family homes. So, and then we have one special category. I'm not exactly sure why that isn't in the addition category, but if you take a carport and turn that into, or a garage and turn that into an apartment, we have one of those. Just 2 more. An office conversion, so we're taking office space and converting it, and I think you may see some more of those coming down the pike. Taking office space, converting it to a residence, one of those, and non-residential commercial construction where, again, it's a commercial property, not an office, and we've seen one of those. So the total, then, is 43 permits and 89 new residential units that have been created through the first 6 months of this year. And that's very good by comparison to the previous several years during the recession time. So I can give you more, but I just think that the best news is that we're seeing housing on kind of both sides of that. We have single-family home investments occurring, and we're hoping that we'll see more, and we're also seeing some manufactured homes investment occurring as well. Right, and not just that. And then, again, I think the largest one coming up this year is going to be probably apartment or condo. I think that we are in talking with several folks, and if it happens that these will come through. Some are under review right now, but I'm not counting them because it's not issued. But I think we have at least two apartment complexes for 10 and 13 units, or 13 and 12 units, I believe, sorry, for 25 total units under review right now. So these numbers will change in July, and we'll keep you updated.
Thank you.
Try to be as specific, and by asking the question specific to the data, I was getting better answers than we've had before.
And Mr. Hart, how many mother-in-law apartments have we?
So the way I would count the mother-in-law apartments is probably a couple of categories there that I gave you. I would think that the single-family residential would, with another unit with it, would be there'd be about 11 of those. That would be my guess.
Okay. Thank you. Question, Ms. Becker?
Thank you. Are you feeling that you're able to keep up with all of this? Is the turnaround time satisfactory to you?
Yes, and we're looking for ways to improve that turnaround time. And I did an analysis of turnaround on all permits, but I'll keep digging down. That same-day permits, 47% of our permits are turned over in the first day, so we get them out. I need to get more specific data about which ones, though, but I know that 47% of them are coming out the same day when they come up to the counter. So that's pretty good.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? All right. Anyway, it looks positive.
Good.
I think our talk for 6 months kind of got people excited, and things are breaking loose on the private side anyway, so that's good. And so I hope that we can figure out a way to narrow this down now to get to the spectrum on either side of what we need to get to help with our affordable housing in that, and our senior housing, or our single SRO, single resident occupancies in that.
Right. And most of those categories we have not seen anything at this point.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll move forward to the attorney's first report to us, and she has got a lot of exciting news also. Ms. Mead?
Thank you. Our civil side is fully staffed. After a very successful interview with the deputy city attorney and our office manager, we have hired a new prosecutor who's starting July 29th, and on that date, we will be fully staffed, the entire office. Our request for legal services form, which is going to be the method that departments will initiate legal services in the law department, is going live this Friday after much tweaking and testing in-house. Our ProLaw, which is our case management system, has been installed on all of the law department computers. We have an internal training piece that we have to do ourselves, and we have on-site training on August 20th. So hopefully shortly thereafter we'll all be proficient and we'll be able to use that system. And lastly, I had a very successful meeting with Chief Johnson and a number of officers with the goal of looking towards improving our joint efficiency and relationship, and have implemented a lot of what I think are very exciting changes with respect to how we prosecute cases and some of our internal policies. I'm happy to fill you in more detail if you would like. Feel free to give me a call.
Thank you, Ms. Mead. Are there any questions for Ms. Mead? Mr. Jones, you guys did a little bit of briefing with Ms. Mead. You want to do that right now?
Sure. After the discussion we had in the interview process and hiring, you had asked Mr. Smith and I to sort of lay out some of the issues that came out of that, both positive and some of our concerns. We shared that with the members of the assembly, and then we met for about a half an hour on Friday. We went over those with Ms. Mead, and she only questioned a couple things, and probably my wording as much as anything else. But I was very pleased. We got very much the same report back. I think she's done an admirable job of getting fully staffed as quickly as she has. I think it was a very productive meeting that we had. Carl might want to add.
Thank you. One of the issues that, not issues, but one of the questions that came up, and Mr. Jones and I could not answer on behalf of the entire assembly at that moment, that question being, what is a reasonable interval for us to communicate as a full body with council? And we talked about whether or not, for example, that council would have to be at each meeting. That remains an open question. So I just wanted to reassure the assembly that we did communicate all the depth and breadth of all those concerns that came up as a result of the interview process. And we feel very good that was communicated clearly. But this loop of communication with council is a high priority for the assembly, but it remains an open question as to how we do that.
Right. And just for your information, we discussed this, the city manager and I and Ms. Mead, today, as a matter of fact, and talked about it. As far as assembly meetings go, she needs to be here for us to keep us on the straight and narrow, both staff and us as assembly members in the assembly. For the other, committee meetings and things like that, if Mr. Keel has an issue that needs to have law addressed in HR, I would expect him to contact Ms. Mead, and she would either assign somebody to that issue, or she would come and either present to you or give you input. Same way with all of the different chairmans of the different councils, but I don't expect law to be at every single chairmanships, the five, big committees that we have. We would wear two lawyers out in that time frame. So if you have issues as chairmans within your own committee that needs dealing with law, please give her a call. She's willing to either assign you somebody or come and talk to you about whatever issues you might have that you're dealing with as chairman. So that'd be good. And again, I guess I would reiterate the fact that our unwritten policy is if we want to direct either staff, the law department or city management to do something, to take direction action for us, the assembly, it would be nice to do it in a motion format and then get five of us to say yes, or all nine of us to say yes, and then that would give staff and the law department direction to move forward on doing something for us, whatever that action is. But
Mr. Mayor, I have a question.
Mr. Nankervis, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What you just said, are you proposing that we no longer give any direction to the city manager or the city attorney unless we go through a motion and take a vote? Did I understand that incorrectly?
That's the way we've always done our business, Mr. Nankervis. So I don't expect any of the assembly members going to city staff, either the manager or the law department, on their own and giving direction to staff on their own. That needs to come from us as a body and move forward from there.
Okay, good. And to follow that up, should we all decide as a group here if we want the city attorney to show up on every Monday like you just said you had that conversation with him? Do we need to discuss that?
No, we don't. That's a standard operating procedure. She will.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Any other questions, comments? Okay, we'll move forward to assembly reports, and the mayor's report is first up, and I just wanted to discuss two items real quickly, and that's the city manager's looking at the lobbyists with the federal government contract and is putting together some, in fact, the law department is too, they're putting together a new term contract for them. And now that we know that Mr. Greening is not coming back for the state level, I've asked the city manager to look into how we would get a list of names to us to make decisions on who we want to have our next state lobbyist to be, because November is coming soon and we need to have that person on board before November to
if we have any input to the governor's budget, of course, that's before then. So if any of you have individual thoughts on the state lobbyists that you wish to see us or how we want to do it, please feel free to get a hold of me. Otherwise, next month we'll have a list of or a way that the city manager is going to go about getting that list for us and for us to make the decision on the state lobbyists. Any comments, questions on that? The next issue, and I'm sure Ms. Crane has in depth seen the new roundabout stuff going on at Ock Bay. So I imagine it's kind of a mess out there, different times of the day and one-way traffic and everything.
It looks more like a triangle at this point than a roundabout. So I'm kind of confused about where they're going with it.
DOT says it will be round in the end.
Oh, okay.
And a little bit more uphill, but yeah. So they've just started, but they've done a lot of work up out there.
Quite a bit.
Already, for sure. So it'll be interesting. And everybody, please have patience. And again, that applies to mainly to the boat and trailer parking. It seems like we're doing work everywhere in Ock Bay also. Up at the university has different work projects going on. We can't park legally boats and trailers up there. We've asked them. The bus barn is sealed off. Ock Bay School is sealed off, of course, because they're doing the dirt work in there and the parking lot. So we just don't have any of the old parking places for those boat owners at this time. So we have no really good answer to where do you put your boat and your truck when you're trying to launch your boat at Ock Bay. It's going to be hard. Okay, that's all I have on Mayor's report. Committee reports. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Committee of the Whole met on July 1st, and Mr. Watts gave us an update on the snow storage project. And at that time, at the conclusion of that, we agreed we are satisfied with the explanation and consider that project completed. Roy discussed the Archipelago property, the Bridge Park, told us that Reed Stoops and Kirby Day have both confirmed permission to use their property to continue building the seawalk from the end of Taku to the end of the South Franklin Dock, and that work will start this winter. Cal Hart gave us a written update on the comp plan and highlighted the major changes, which are significant. Housing, economic development, energy, transportation, the land use maps, utilities, facilities, and that will be coming to the assembly soon. Mr. Watt also gave an update on the housing plan, which listed who the responsible party would be, staff, assembly, committee, whatever. Suggested responsible parties and a timeline for reporting to the assembly. And they labeled every one of the items on the list, whether or not they're recommending that they have further study, not be done at all, they feel that they've already been accomplished, that are ones that are not agreeable, or things they think the assembly needs to decide upon. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Wanamaker?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Public Works and Facilities Committee has not met since the last regular assembly meeting, and there's little enough activity right now that we're considering not having an early August meeting, instead consolidating the items into a late August meeting, but no decision has been made at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Nothing since our last HRC meeting in the middle of our last special assembly meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Crane?
We're looking at Wednesday, September the 11th for the next Finance Committee meeting, and we will, beginning in September, begin having a monthly Finance Committee. We're working on the list of agenda items to start on this fall. So if there are issues that each of you have in particular, be sure and let me know so we can get those on the agenda. Also, we will begin in September by taking each month and looking at a particular department where we have an opportunity to talk to the department head, get a full overview of that department, everything that's happening there, and be able to look at budget as well, so that we learn a little bit more about each of the departments as we head into the next budget session.
Thank you, Ms. Gray. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For Lands Committee, we do not have a report this evening other than just making the suggestion that Mr. Cheney is working on his work plan for the rest of the year, and I've encouraged him as soon as he can to share that with the committee at our next meeting. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Smith? Mr. Jones, how about a liaison reports?
Thank you. Couple things on docks and harbors. July 27th, the Pusich family, I think, is having a family reunion, and they are going to be basically mounting the interpretive signage at the harbor over in Douglas. And that was presented to the Docks and Harbors Board. They looked at it and things. And so that's at 3 p.m. on the 27th of July. I think it would be good if members of the assembly could be there. I know the Docks and Harbors Board has been invited. Secondly, if I can find the right spot here, the 35% design on the redo of Aurora Harbor is due, and so they're going to have a public meeting on the 24th of July at 5 p.m. at the Yacht Club to talk about where they are in the design of the remodel at Aurora Harbor. People should attend if they can. And then I believe that they have completed the Tiger Grant application to help with the Maritime Services building down under the bridge at the park there. There's a lot of talk whether or not they thought they'd be successful, but they put in the application for an additional $3.3 million. Hopefully we might get lucky and get that, which might speed up that whole project down there that we've talked about.
Mr. Jones, was that the Marine Exchange or what?
Yes, the Marine Exchange building.
Okay,
and then I know I've talked a couple times about Docks and Harbors Board wanting to have a time with the assembly to talk about issues and try to schedule that. And I know we just keep putting that off, but I'd like to, before our schedule gets, you know, too full in the fall. And I know we're going into elections. We'll have a new assembly member anyway. It might be good to try to, you know, schedule that time with the Docks and Harbors Board. I think there's some other issues that we may all need to discuss.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
I just would like to ask you a question, Mr. Jones. Did
sure.
you give us times on those two events?
The Pusich is at 3 p.m. in the afternoon on the 27th. And I believe the 24th, the Aurora Harbor public meeting at the Yacht Club is at 5 p.m.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Smith, liaison report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At the last Planning Commission meeting, I expressed to the Planning Commissioners appreciation on behalf of the Assembly for all the hard work that they'd done on the comprehensive plan. And they are looking very much forward to a new effort in the next 3 years, and I think we've got a real solid basis to do that together. Thank you.
All right. Good. Ms. Crane?
Nothing at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Only that the Affordable Housing Commission will have a meeting on the 17th over the lunch hour at Greening Park. Actually, I think it may start at 11:30. At Greening Park to work specifically on our affordable housing fund. It is not doing much lending, and the group is very interested in tweaking and adjusting the rules and procedures for that fund so that those dollars can go to work.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Keel. Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The school board held a special meeting, I believe it was Friday of last week. It was an executive session meeting to discuss some labor negotiations, and I don't have any information about it since I did not attend. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Madam Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. No report.
Thank you. We'll move on to assembly comments and questions. I just have two things here. One, we got a nice big thank you from Finley, who is 7 years old, and it says, thank you for the fireworks show.
So, you are welcome.
Instead of a complaint about noise, we have a nice big thank you from Finley, and I
Mr. Mayor, if my dog could write, there'd be a complaint. Yes.
And I had several.
Oh, I do too. Thank you. And the next thing is that we need to say happy birthday to our clerk. Oh, she's 21.
Yes, finally. Oh.
And we have a card here for you, Madam Clerk.
Thank you very much.
And you can have the blue folder that she normally gives me with a whole bunch of things to sign.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori, for all your work. You do a great job for us.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you. Is it now a good time for my committee and liaison report?
It sure is. I tried to drop you, Mr. Nankervis.
Well, they're going to be abbreviated.
So. Go ahead.
The airport board had a meeting on the 10th. And I'm sure those people did some wonderful stuff. I was on the boat fishing, so I can't report on what they did. I did give them a report on what we had been up to, so that was passed out. I gave that to Patty, and she passed that out. I also wanted to say that the Commission on Sustainability had an entrance in the float, or had a float, I guess you'd call it. They had an electric car. They have a group of electric cars in the parade, and they were very well received. That went over well. The Commission on Sustainability has a meeting this Wednesday evening at 5:30 in room 224. And on July 2nd, Parks and Rec Advisory Committee met. Those people did some wonderful things, and I was on the boat out fishing, and I can't report on everything they did, but I believe they gave you some feedback, all of us, some feedback on Cope Park that was there. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, man. Mr. Dibdahl?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dibdahl. Presiding officer reports. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, we have our pre-hearing for the Big Mill appeal on the Planning Commission decision. It'll be in the conference room 224 at 1 o'clock.
And that's a pre-hearing?
Pre-hearing.
Okay, with the applicants and?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Do we have any other? We don't have any other right now, just the one.
Just the one appeal.
You want me to wish harder, Ms. Becker? All right, we'll move on to assembly comments and questions. Mr. Jones.
Just a couple, Ms. Becker. You mentioned the Committee of the Whole and Hal Hart briefed us on the comp plan, and that'll be coming to the assembly soon. I thought that there was going to be at least one, if not more, Committee of the Whole where we were going to be briefed on specific chapters before that happened. Have those been scheduled?
Not, we have not scheduled them.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure those were going to happen before the comp plan came before the assembly, because I thought that was our agreement. The second thing is, and maybe this is a question of the city manager, a week or so, maybe 2 weeks ago, we all got an email from an individual that said they had to get a particular store card before that store would honor their senior discount. And there was then a follow-up email from the city manager said they were going to look into that and report. I haven't heard anything. Do you have any update at all?
Yes, we are. The finance department director is still looking into that to talk with the businesses themselves to find out why they can't just take our senior tax exemption card and use that, why they need to create their own. So when I talked to him on Friday, he was going out to talk to the businesses. They have drafted a letter that will be going out to businesses saying, here's the card and you shouldn't have to use somebody else's, but we want to understand the mechanism behind why they think they need to have another one, because we don't want our seniors to have 25 cards to go do business throughout town with the one single senior tax exemption card. So we are still following up on it, but we want to understand the rationale on their end, why they need to have a different system other than the card we provide.
Mr. Jones?
This is a follow-up. Is that anything that through an ordinance we can just tell businesses that they have to accept it and accept that card? I mean, what is there to understand other than no?
We just want to understand why. We think we understand why they're doing it from a business standpoint, but we want to check our assumptions, and then be able to come back with recommendations back to the assembly and say, here's what we looked at and here's what we recommend.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Smith?
No comment, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gray?
Nothing.
Mr. Nankervis? Assembly comments and questions?
No, but I think I've asked a lot already tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Dibdahl?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To Mr. Jones' issue, my recollection of the ordinance, and I don't have it in front of me, is that actually it speaks to the sufficiency of our card. So I'm not sure we need to change our ordinance to accomplish that. I would have to look back at it again. I remain somewhat exercised about the public process issues on the resolution tonight. So I give notice of reconsideration of my vote on resolution 2656.
Thank you.
That's all from me, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On August 25th and 26th, I'll be in all-day meetings. So if there's any meeting, I would find it difficult to attend. The sales tax card by some businesses in this community, I've had several people stop me in the last few days, and they've expressed their concerns to me about it. And it sounds to me as if these companies are collecting additional information that they don't need in order to provide this senior sales tax exemption. And one gentleman told me that he was told that if he did not fill this out and turn it in, that they would not allow him to have the discount at their store. And so I intended on turning that over to the city attorney a little later on after. I was going to try and get the gentleman to contact the city attorney directly. Something about it doesn't sound right. And that's a concern to me. The other issue is, since the resolution is a procedural thing, I question whether a resolution can be allowed to have notice of reconsideration. I'd like to hear from the city attorney.
Thank you. Mr. Wanamaker? Ms. Mead?
I'm thinking it.
Go ahead.
You know, honestly, I hesitate to say right now whether that would be appropriate. The resolution does allow for certain action, which may be something that can be reconsidered, but I would like time to look at that. That's right. Acceptable.
Okay. The notice of reconsideration will stand for right now, and then we'll give you till the next meeting to update us and figure out, is that legal for us to do this way?
Well, there's only the notice of the reconsideration, right, has been given. There's nothing that's required at this point. It will, right, have to be taken up at the next assembly meeting, which means I have, okay, a little bit of time to give you an answer.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lee. Anything else, Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. The reason I bring that up is that I once gave notice of reconsideration on a resolution, and the city attorney advised that it was not proper.
Okay.
And so that's the reason I raise it now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to let people know that the Marine Exchange Building and Ed Page would very much like all of you to stop by and visit. It's very interesting. I did go on July 2nd and visited with him and saw the whole setup, and it's what we're looking to build on our bridge park. And it's very interesting. He has a lot of information, and it was definitely worthwhile.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Seeing none, we'll move on to Ms. Becker, executive session.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor, point of order, don't we have continuation of public?
Oh, yes, we do. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to give public comment on non-agenda items? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Thank you. And now we will move on to executive session. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Jones, for reminding us of that. I should have been on top of that one. Yes, I move that we recess to executive session to discuss a financial item that could have an adverse impact on our finances of the city, and that's land negotiations, and personnel items that could discuss and impugn the character of a person, and that is city manager evaluation and JSD independent investigation report.
Are there any objections to moving into executive session? Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on going into executive session for those three items? Seeing none, hearing none, we are at recess.
And can we have a break?
Yep, 5-minute break.